is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Three wars in Eurasia. The headlines in Jerusalem. British, German, foreign ministers heading to Israel as it weighs response to Iranian attack. In addition to that, we have news from Israel of drone attacks from Hezbollah, casualties recorded. We also have repeatedly headlines out of London that tell a story of many world leaders consulting in all directions. For example, a headline from London that Ebrahim Raisi, the president of Iran, called Vladimir Putin. A headline from London that Wang Yi, the foreign minister of the People's Republic of China, the blunt speaker, has remarked that Iran can handle the turmoil. For example, we have a headline in London suggesting or telling us that Iran has announced that it's shutting down many of its facilities associated with enriching uranium for fear of an Israeli attack. Gregory, a very good evening to you. There's chaos in all the headlines since the attack on Saturday night. The attack was drones and missiles. Right now, the big debate is, will Israel retaliate? How will Israel retaliate? The larger picture is, there was the war in Ukraine. There was the war in Gaza. There is the provocations in the north of Israel. There are the Houthis damaging world global trade in the Red Sea. This all begins to look like one great big story. Is it? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, what we're looking at, particularly with the Iran-Israel aspect of this now, which is a very convenient, if you like, movement of public attention away from Gaza, but it is all really political theater, and all of the key participants know it, and particularly, of course, the Iranian and Israeli leaders. What we have to bear in mind is that Iran had no option but to come out with bold statements and to promise a direct response to that April 1st Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus, killing senior Pastoran, or Revolutionary Guard officers. That was an attack on by Israel directly against Iranian sovereign territory. So they had to respond. The question for Iran was, how could they respond without causing a further escalation in the situation? There are several reasons why Iran is not really prepared to escalate this, and I think we've mentioned this on a number of occasions. Firstly, Iran is not the primary sponsor of Hamas or the Muslim Brotherhood. The primary sponsors of Hamas are Turkey and Qatar, because they are both Muslim Brotherhood countries, and Hamas is a military wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. Moreover, the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas are Sunni Muslim entities. Iran is a Shia entity. It only engaged in support for Hamas some years ago to basically provide a target, if you like, at the rear of the U.S.-led encirclement of Iran, which began a decade and more ago during the Iraq wars and so on, two decades ago and three. So the Iranians were basically saying, well, you can try to build a cordon around Iran, but we can strike at your rear, namely Israel. Other than that, you have to bear in mind that Iran and Israel were the closest of allies as long as the Shah of Iran was alive. And that was and he left office, of course, in 1979. And until that time, of course, Iran was a profoundly good ally to the United States until Jimmy Carter poisoned that relationship and pulled the rug out from under the Shah. And a lot of Iranian Jews are living in Israel, and until recently, the president of Israel was an Iranian Jew. So, interestingly, the Iranians and Israel do have a special relationship. There are a lot of Iranian Jews still living in Iran. So, the basic nature was, when Israel attacked on April 1st, Iran had to come up with a response. There is no question that Tehran leaked to the United States and Israel the nature, the targeting, and the timing of the proposed Iranian attack on Israel, clearly indicating that it proposed a symbolic attack designed to avoid human casualties, but to show that Iran had responded in a manly fashion. Then you had the Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei announcing when the first salvos of several hundred unmanned combat aerial vehicles, drones, in other words, or loitering munitions, and cruise missiles and light ballistic missiles were fired. This gave the Israelis several hours' notice to ensure that they had their Iron Dome and David Sling's anti-missile systems up and ready, and that U.S., British, and Jordanian systems were online, either in Jordan on the ground or on British and U.S. warships in the Mediterranean. They were already on station and on alert, ready to intercept some 300 of these long-range Iranian systems, which were extremely vulnerable. And as a result, of course, 99% of them were intercepted. No deaths were recorded by Israel, except for an injury to a Bedouin child who happened to be in the wrong place. And, of course, all of those 300 or so heavy systems and 350 light rockets were fired against Israeli targets, which were military targets, away from civilian areas, so that they were quite legitimate attacks. Now, what's interesting is that no Turkish, Qatari, or Hamas military assets were used in these attacks. In other words, Iran did this on its own with Hezbollah, admittedly, which is an Iranian surrogate and Shia. Iran didn't involve the real Muslim Brotherhood entities with Hamas. So it was also clear that Iran did not use its heavier ballistic missiles, like the 2,000-kilometer range Sajil or Sajil 2 medium-range ballistic missiles, which are nuclear-capable. We have to bear in mind that Israel knows, and Iran knows that Israel knows, that Iran has a number of nuclear weapons deployed and ready to be used. Iran made it clear that it was not using any of the delivery systems which could carry a nuclear warhead, just to make it clear that this was not a nuclear attack. Israel would have had its Arrow 3 anti-ballistic missile systems in place, and they probably could have dealt quite handily with the Sajil or Sajil 2, and so could the British and U.S. Warship-based anti-ballistic missile systems. So the reality is that the retaliation by Iran was to signal honor is satisfied to its regional audience and its local and its home population. So as a result, of course, Israel said, well, okay, but we were still hit, and now we have to have another response. And that Israeli response, everyone's urging Israel to hold its peace. And in fact, Israel is saying, well, we'll decide at a time and place of our response. In other words, we can defer thinking about that, so please forget about that. So the reality was that Russia was probably the conduit between the Iranian leadership and Israel and or the United States, because Russia has been putting enormous pressure on the Iranian leadership to ensure that this war with Israel does not escalate into something serious. This is because Moscow has only just now succeeded in bringing Iran into Russia's international north-south transport corridor. That creates that wonderful network, which we've discussed before, from St. Petersburg on the Baltic and up into the Arctic over to the Atlantic, from St. Petersburg down by rivers and rail and road and oceanic links down through the Caspian Sea and into Iran and across Iran to Bandar Abbas on the Indian Ocean, and then from there to India. This is critical to Moscow's global trade links, and also to its strategic encirclement of the People's Republic of China. And it also gives Russia a role in being able to establish a naval base in the Indian Ocean, finally getting its warm water port. So Russia wants nothing to jeopardize the security of that, and the clerics in Iran want nothing to jeopardize it either, because that's what gives them the possibility of boosting their national income and giving them protection against an internal uprising against the clerics, which is very much a possibility. So what we're seeing is, through all of this, what looks like Iran signaling to Israel and to the West, look, guys, we want to get out of this. We were drawn into this by Hamas. We didn't want to get involved in the first place. And frankly, we think it's Turkey and Qatar and Hamas who are basically not only working against Israel, but working against Iran. So why don't we put the blame on Turkey, let them take the heat for this, and let's stop worrying about the Iran-Israel confrontation, which is built up since the demise of the Shah. Now, the question is whether Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, is prepared to go along with this, because he has his own political problems at home in Israel, and he has been vociferous in wanting to have this public blame for Iran as being the great threat. And certainly that's the case, because Iran does have nuclear weapons and has had them since 1991, essentially. And we've published a lot of hard evidence on that. I've spoken to intelligence community people in this country and abroad. They don't disagree with our intelligence on that, but they can't afford to acknowledge Iran as a nuclear weapon state.
Gregory, why did Raisi call Putin? Can we speculate?
Well, there's no question that they had a call, many calls, I would say, before this event. If there weren't direct calls between Raisi and Putin, then there were many working level discussions in Tehran.
Raisi is a candidate to be supreme leader. He's in competition with the supreme leader's son, Mojtaba. However, what does Putin want Iran to do? Does it want it to obey? Does it favor the provocation of Israel and the United States? We have about a minute. We need to get on to AUKUS.
No, absolutely not. As I said, Russia has been trying to stop this from escalating. Raisi himself doesn't want to escalate this. Yes, they will attempt to look robust in their response and the preservation of Iranian sovereignty. But really what they showed was that the Iranian weapons systems were totally inadequate and could be comprehensively and easily defeated by the Israelis. But the reality is Russia wants to tamp this down. It needs to secure that international north-south transport corridor, and Iran, the clerics there, have to do it as well. And this is, and this will either secure or at least preserve Raisi's opportunity to replace the present and ailing supreme leader.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to Australia and AUKUS. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Matthews.